Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. Surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Tonight, we are going to discuss green conservatism. If you think being a green conservative is an oxymoron, I'm here to tell you that it is not. And this show will illustrate how that is so. And you do not necessarily have to be a liberal or a Democrat to be a loyal environmentalist. I'll start the show by giving the listeners a little test on whether they could consider themselves as a mainstream environmentalist. You may ask yourself, what is a mainstream environmentalist? Well, I will define that later. Here is the test, so I'll give a few moments, and while you grab a piece of paper and pen. Okay, great. Hopefully you had the opportunity to pick yourself up a piece of paper and pencil to take this little test to see if you can consider yourself a mainstream environmentalist. And what you should do is rate yourself on a scale from 1 to 10 for each of these statements, with 10 meaning that you strongly agree and the statement with the statement, and 1 meaning you strongly disagree. And now we'll pause between each statement to give you a chance to ponder and write your number. Okay? All you got to do is you don't have to write down the statement, just the number that you'll be adding up later. Okay, the first one is, do you and you can do numbers between 1 and 10. Okay. The first one, a healthy environment should be able to coexist with a healthy growing economy. As I said, with 10 meaning that you strongly agree with the statement, and a 1 meaning you strongly disagree, and then in between the varying degrees. Okay, with the second, is investments in science and technology will generate solutions to most of our environmental problems. Okay, the next one, incentives should be offered to encourage corporations to clean up the environment. Okay, next. Most disagreements about the environment can be resolved through the art of compromise. Okay, governments can play an important role in fostering and incentivizing a healthy environment, but lose support when they are too controlling. Okay. The next one. Democracies have been far better environmental stewards than totalitarian states. Okay. The next one. Corporate and private philanthropy is essential to the success of a global environmental movement. Okay. The next one. Most of us have been taught to respect and protect the natural world. Okay. Next one. Political leadership will be defined in the 21st century by having a strong commitment to environmental stewardship. And the last one. America must be a global leader on environmental issues. Okay, now take some time to add those up. And for the people who just got in and missed the beginning part of this little test, it is to see whether one can consider themselves as a mainstream environmentalist, which I will just define shortly. So after you add them up, okay, folks, now when you have that, I'll give a few more moments. Now, as you see, if you scored a 70 or more, you can consider yourself what is called a mainstream environmentalist. And I posed a question earlier in the beginning of the show, what exactly is a mainstream environmentalist defined? Well, a mainstream environmentalist is defined as those who share the core values of appreciation, respect, and active stewardship for the earth. Now, as part of the description of the show tonight, where I said you do not necessarily have to be a liberal or a Democrat to be a loyal conservative, those points do not sound like they fall in the liberal category, do they? I would say not. So if you would please take a few moments to listen to this audio clip about what can emerge as a new environmental movement called Green Conservatism, and enjoy Cliff.
From the shores of Maine to the beaches of Hawaii, America is defined by its natural beauty. Most Americans have a healthy respect for our environment. They want government to ensure that we have clean air and water, and they want to preserve America's parks and wildlife for future generations. Many Americans also believe that new science and technology are key to solving our environmental challenges, not government regulation and litigation. Despite the broad agreement among Americans, the political debate in Washington has become even more divided. Liberals accuse conservatives of not caring about the environment, and conservatives accuse liberals of sacrificing a healthy economy and individual freedom for the environment. As a result, issues like climate change and energy development have become lightning rods for controversy, and progress has been blocked by politics.
I think somehow in the 1980s, the environment became seen as liberal versus conservative, but it shouldn't be.
In his book, A Contract with the Earth, Newt argues that conservatives need to develop a green conservatism.
Green conservatism is the recognition that the basic principles of conservatism, market orientation, incentives, the work ethic, focus on science and technology and engineering, practical realism, all of these can be brought to bear to actually create better solutions faster than bureaucracy, litigation, big government, regulation.
Newt emphasizes the need for more energy from clean coal, nuclear, solar, wind, biofuel, oil, and natural gas. In 2008, Newt and I hosted a documentary about America's vast energy potential. Our movie, We Have the Power, argues that America can have a clean, abundant, and affordable energy supply. But what about climate change, an issue that has become contentious in recent elections? Conservatives and liberals disagree over the cause, much less how to solve it. Again, Newt stresses the importance of conservatives offering better solutions.
I don't think that the catastrophist left has enough evidence to say for sure that we're going to have global warming and it'll be a disaster. And I don't think that the anti-global warming right has enough evidence to say for sure that there won't be global warming. And so the question for me becomes, if the word conservatism implies conserving things, and if it implies caution, then what's the right cautionary strategy?
So what is the future for green conservatism? With the White House and Congress controlled by Democrats, is there really a market for conservative solutions on the environment?
I think it's going to be a very clear choice, and as this economy gets worse, people are going to want a sound economy and a good environment. They're not going to want to destroy the economy in the name of the environment. Hi, I'm Newt Gingrich.
And I'm Calista Gingrich. We believe that a healthy environment must be designed to coexist with a growing economy.
Today, new science and technology can create better solutions than government regulation and litigation.
Market incentives such as tax credits and prizes will encourage scientific and technological breakthroughs.
On the other hand, tax increases will kill jobs, reduce the amount of available energy, and weaken the economy.
To learn more about America's potential to develop affordable, abundant, and clean energy, Newt and I encourage you to check out our movie, We Have the Power.
And to learn more about green conservatism, Terry Maple and I encourage you to take a look at our book, A Contract with the Earth.
America is blessed with natural resources and innovative opportunity.
With your help, we can make America the global leader in conservation for future generations.
Okay, folks, I hope you enjoyed that little clip. I'd like to take this time to let in a caller who really probably doesn't need much introduction. His name, I believe, is on hold. Is Samuel Sanford. He has his own Blog Talk radio show from 10 p.m. to midnight and sometimes even later, past almost to 1 o'clock a.m. You can find his show on Blog Talk Radio under Conservative Politics. And you can also find his show by going to a Facebook application called Newt Now, in which you can just put Newt Now, one word, in the search engine, and it'll put the app in there. Would be a list of a number of shows. But without further ado, let me bring in Samuel.
Hey,
Hey, Sammy, how you doing, bud?
We're hanging in there, hanging in there.
Great, yeah, great.
I liked your little test there. I came out about 82.
Oh, great. Great.
Just something off the subject just for a quick while.
Okay.
Quick second. I had heard today that why we need Newt and why we don't need Romney as our presumptive candidate is Barack Obama is beating on the Bloomberg poll is beating Mitt Romney 53-40%.
Woo! Wow. That's a shellacking.
That is a shellacking, and that's the reason me and you both keep on saying that we don't believe he can defeat Barack Obama. But getting back to the green stuff, I mean, we have to be good stewards of our natural resources, and it has to be done in a way that it does not punish the American consumer or the American businesses. And it can be done that way, but
right. I mean, we definitely have the technology to do it.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is America, you know. To say that, you know, we can't do it is, you know, I mean, look what we did in World War II, pretty much, you know, saved the world from fascism. I'm sure this is something that we could do, you know.
We can put a man on the moon. We can do that, too.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I just, people shouldn't give up on stuff, but I mean, of course, the liberals, they want it to make it all about the government controlling everything, and they want to control everything in your life, and they don't care about how much it's going to cost to the American consumer and the American
mm-hmm.
businesses. They just want to do it. And you have to put in, you have to use common sense when you start putting environmental stuff and mixing it into the economy. You have to do it in a logical way where it does not hurt our country or our consumers.
Right. And what need, I mean, to have sustainable solutions, we need to have an equal part of, you know, social interaction, economic interaction, and environmental action in equal parts in order to be successful, and where one aspect doesn't hurt another.
Exactly. I agree 100%. And as the liberal or progressive movement wants it, I mean, it's just going to destroy our economy if all their policies were allowed to be implemented. And when you destroy the economy, then you're going to destroy any kind of initiative for power companies to produce clean coal fire plants or hydroelectric plants or natural gas power plants or all of the things out there. I mean, windmills, and of course, you know how I feel about windmills.
Right.
They're really a waste of time because, I mean, if the wind's not blowing, one thing, you don't bring any power there, and they also do kill wildlife, birds especially. And, but.
Yeah, the two I'm not a very big fan of are wind because it's not very efficient, and it does, wreak havoc on some bird populations. And one thing that I know a lot of conservatives are, really like is nuclear power. But I'm really not a big fan of nuclear. I just feel like there's too many dangers, especially with, you know, where you're going to store all the nuclear material, you know, the spent nuclear material. I have concerns about that. My favorite is solar, you know, solar energy, especially once, science and technology, gets the efficiency of the solar, the solar panels, to the point where you can have cost parity with, coal and, and natural gas and things of that nature. But, you know, but I think it – well, go ahead. Go ahead, Sammy.
No, but I agree. The solar is a good way to go, but it doesn't need to go the way the Barack Obama is taking it. You know what I mean, but I mean –
Yeah, well, exactly, because, you know, what he's done is he's taken money, taxpayer money, okay, and, you know, green conservatism is getting money from the markets, you know what I mean, getting money from the private sector in investments, you know, and research and development, you know. No, I'm not, you know, saying, you know, government has their place, but I'm saying with, you know, green conservatism and conservationism as well, you know, they don't use as much of the government, you know, and then you won't have instances such as I think you're alluding to with Solyndra, in which, and I was really, you know, upset about the whole Solyndra debacle, because it not only wasted all that taxpayer money, it put, you know, solar energy in a bad light. I mean, it's not, you know, the industry's fault per se. I'm not talking the whole industry's fault, but it does make it, you know, make it look bad. Just like, you know, the thing that happened in the Catholic Church with, you know, some of the priests. There was only a handful of priests who did what they did, but it put a dark spot on the entire church.
Yes, it did. This is how I feel, and I think me and you've discussed this before. I believe instead of the government actually giving them money, give them tax incentives to promote your business. Then, and when they start hiring people, giving them incentives for bringing on employees to make these products and in R&D for these products. Because right now, America can't even compete with China for their solar panels. I mean, China subsidizes all their solar panel stuff, and America can't even come anywhere close in the price of what China sells them for. But, of course, China has one ultimate goal, and that's to overtake the market on it. And so they're going to subsidize it and possibly even lose money on it.
Right, in order to corner the market on it.
Yep, exactly. And that's one issue where Solyndra was having issues. Their panels couldn't compete against the Chinese solar panels.
They did not have a good business model. They did not, you know, Solyndra did not. But that doesn't mean, you know, that doesn't mean solar is all bad. I mean, you know, there's a company, right, there, you know, there's a, you know, a place around here, you know, called Affordable Solar Energy. They're a, you know, provider that, you know, it's a small, you know, from my understanding, it's a small business. But, you know, it's not going to, you know, take all the, you know, what was it, like billions of dollars or half $1 billion, I believe, that was given to Solyndra?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm kind of mixed on one thing, is like on these cheap solar panels that are coming from China. I necessarily don't like the government getting in on something like that, but on the other hand, I feel like maybe to equal the playing field for American companies there, since they're trying to corner the market, we can put a tariff on their product coming in from overseas, to either force them to build the panels here in the U.S. or to make American companies more competitive.
Well, and one of the reasons why they're able to sell them so cheaply is because the wages in China are so much different, so much lower than they are in the United States.
Exactly.
The wage gap between the American worker and the Chinese workers, you know, is vast.
Exactly.
Is a large, and thus they're able to, you know, produce things, you know, a lot cheaper because of their labor. Well, I know why, and a lot of that money went out to, you know, so-called green jobs. You know, one thing I've been screaming about here in Ohio is that in Ohio, you only can recycle, when you look at the bottom of a plastic bottle or something plastic, it has a, you know, the little recycling sign and a number in the middle.
Uh-huh.
Well, that number ranges from one to six, okay? In Ohio, we can only recycle one to two. Only one and two plastic. We only have recycling facilities in Ohio for one and two, number one and number two plastic. Now, if you want to create a green job, and you want to promote, green initiatives, build more recycling plants that have the capabilities, like they do in, like, California, to be able to recycle plastics one through plastic five. There you created a green industry, within recycling. Okay, so you're creating green jobs in that way. You're having green jobs by them building the recycling plants. Okay, then you're having the green jobs because people have to run those plants and people have to work at those plants, and it's for a green initiative, which would be recycling. But I didn't see anything like that going on. I mean, I've seen stuff with I haven't seen any green jobs here in Ohio, for that matter. With what the so-called stimulus package is for.
Yeah. Well, here in Jacksonville, you can put in any kind of plastic in the recycle container. And same thing with glass and aluminum cans and all that. But there's no restrictions here in Jacksonville. I'm not sure about the rest of the state.
Mm-hmm. Well, usually it's something. It's something that's statewide.
Yeah, so it probably is statewide down here in Florida. And
mm-hmm.
I know the same thing in Georgia. You could put any kind of plastic in the recycle container, and same thing in South Carolina, you could too.
Wow. Yeah, see, so the technology is out there. The technology exists.
But I know I've seen stories, though, where some of these things are sent for recycling are actually sent off to the landfill. So
right.
It's been a few years ago since I've seen that on the TV, but maybe they have changed that around. And landfills landfills are another bad thing too. I mean, but what else can we do with our garbage?
Yeah, yes, they are. Well, one of the things they do in Ireland that and they cause it has problems of its own. Is they have a lot of incinerators in Ireland, but it's a small country compared to the United States, of course. But they one of the problems that they have is they're an island country, so waste has become a big problem there and in Ireland, and that's why Ireland does have a lot of green initiatives over there because they just don't have the space like we do here in the United States to take care of the trash.
Yeah.
Well, my wife and I, we got this one of those large, that has wheels on them, recycling bins. It's not even a bin. It's got a big lid. It looks like a real big garbage can. We probably recycle three times more than we put in the trash. We have, like, one bag of trash, and, like, then it's the whole thing full of, recyclables. And that's the goal, of course, so.
Well, we recycle anything that's glass or aluminum or plastic or even like cat food cans. They'll even take cat food cans.
Mm-hmm. In composting, I just found out recently, just in the past couple of weeks or so, that you can compost, as long as you didn't use them for cleaning, windows or dusting or anything like that, you can compost paper towels. I just learned that not that long ago.
Yep, I've heard of that before.
Yeah, and shredded paper, you can compost shredded paper as well. Was a concern, well, what about the ink? But there's, when it comes down to it, there's just so little on there, it really wouldn't, harm anything.
And a lot of people don't realize ink that's in, like, on newspapers, most of that ink is alcohol-based. And so it's pretty sterile anyway, and that alcohol is not going to hurt in the environment, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing I compost is right now is just leaves in my yard.
You do not do those, or?
I compost my leaves. That's the only thing. I don't want to fill up the landfill with leaves. I put the leaves in a big pile every year, and
mm-hmm.
that's good for a couple things for me. It's good get you good soil, and also it gives me good earthworms to go fishing with.
Oh yeah, yeah. They like to do that. They like to go in there. Yeah, and I've got a big tree in the backyard, which provides a lot of shade. Unfortunately, because I like to garden, but it doesn't leave enough shade, enough sun to do as much gardening as I'd like. But I mean, I can cut down a tree. I mean, for me, that's not an option. Cutting a tree down for me is not an option. Just to have to get rid of the shade so I can have more. Just no. I mean, and even if a tree becomes a safety issue, I would prune it, long before I would, before I could cut a tree down.
I hear you. Being down here in hurricane areas, they have to keep trees back from like the power lines and stuff like that. But and there's
right,
reason
well, pruning,
behind that.
Sure. Yeah, you got to do that. And speaking of trees, I think it brings us to an issue of deforestation. That's one of the biggest problems actually, and that's actually one of the advocate of preventing deforestation because, trees are, I think the planting of trees can actually, if done in a massive way, because trees are carbon sinks to help alleviate some of the carbon concerns, putting out carbon, because, I'm sure you're, aware of the talk about carbon dioxide and the possibility of the EPA, considering that as a pollutant. I don't believe they've done it yet, but I know there's been talk of designating carbon dioxide as a pollutant.
I've heard that talk.
Yeah, so it's not there yet, but it's what we breathe out. I mean, it's what we breathe out, and it's what trees take in. So, I mean, there's definitely, ways in which we could, offset the carbon that's put in the air, issue I'm sure you're familiar with is cap and trade. I'm not saying I'm for it. I'm just saying that's one way that what people do is. But the problem is what they talk about carbon sequestering. But see if you're with carbon sequestering, you collect the carbon, but where are you going to put it? what I mean?
Exactly.
So that's the problem with carbon sequestration.
And you remember back when they passed the stimulus bill, those big shams like I think it was out in Oklahoma where they were going to do a study on pig farms.
Yeah, well, because of the methane. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, to me, that is a wasted issue. I mean, there's going to be methane.
Well, methane is definitely more of a quote-unquote greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide is.
Agreed.
Well, and that's why you hear a lot of the, at least in environmental circles, is they talk that, a lot of them become vegetarians because they believe that, with all the meat, that's why you might hear them saying, oh, we got to be, become vegetarians to help the planet because they talk about, one of the things is you have all these, cows and they're serious. It might make you laugh, but they're talking about cow flatulence and all the methane getting into the atmosphere from it. And there's actually a concern about it, out there.
Well, this might sound kind of funny to you. I don't know, I guess about 25 years ago, I knew this old hippie. He was a vegetarian because he didn't want to kill animals. But he would go out to the cow pastures and get the shrooms off the cow dung.
Oh, yeah?
To get his buzz with.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
That way, I just blew me away. The two didn't add up.
Yeah, I'm gonna pause here for a question. I'm gonna turn this out here in chat because I see that there are some guests coming in. I'm wondering if they're having trouble with the chat. So if you are considered just under guest, if you can just put just a simple yes or no, If you are having trouble staying in the chat, or if you're getting booted, or if you've had a hard time getting into chat, if you could just put a yes or a no out there, we'd appreciate it. Yep, see, there
went another one.
Wait,
if they're under by guest only, they can't comment in chat.
Really? I did not know that. Well, here I invite them to chat, and they can't. They must sign it. Oh, okay, wow. Well, see, you know what? You do learn something every day. I did not know that. They must sign in order to chat. I did not know that. Okay.
Yep, they have to sign in.
That's interesting to know.
Well, hey, Robert, I'm going to have to run, go get some, eat some dinner real quick before my
show.
Sure,
Well, I appreciate you coming in, Sammy, and your show at from 10, starting at 10 o'clock tonight till 12 or 1 o'clock, and so I'm sure I'll see you at some point this evening.
And if I have enough time before my show comes back on, I'll call back in.
Great, hey, I appreciate it.
You're welcome, and keep up the good shows, Robert. They're awesome.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Sammy. Yours too, and you take care.
You take care too. Bye bye.
Thank you. Once again, folks, that was Samuel Samford. He has his own Blog Talk Radio show, Constitutional Conservatives Unite. You can find that on Blog Talk Radio. Two modes where you could find it. You can go straight to Blog Talk Radio and find it. You can also find links on Facebook. One of those is called Newt Now, in which you go to Facebook, go in the search engine, put in Newt Now in the search, just one word. Click it, and it will give you a series of shows, including this one. So, and there it is. Sammy's link is in the chat. So we'd appreciate it. If you go and join his show, and then Mark Brasek has a show from midnight to 2, and also if people like this forum, where is it at? Okay, well, never mind. I'll have to bring that up later. Well, I'd like to take this time to give more of a description on, green conservatism and what green conservatism is. So take some time to listen to this clip. And if anyone would like to call and ask if they have any questions about green conservative, the call-in number is area code 347-945-7428. And if you have any ideas, any environmental or any conservationist ideas or questions, please feel free to call in.
Yeah. The first, which my newsletter on Monday will be about, is green conservatism. I want to be very clear about this concept. I taught the Second Earth Day. I was a coordinator of environmental studies. Ronald Reagan issued a positive statement on the first Earth Day. The environment is not inherently a liberal issue. Virtually every American would like to see biodiversity. Virtually every American would like to see clean air. Virtually every American would like to make sure that we do not have unnecessary climate change, recognizing that the climate changes all the time, the natural biological rhythm or natural organic geographic or geological rhythm. Having said that, what happened to the environmentalism is that the hard left took it over. So that the environmentalism became an excuse for hysteria, it became an excuse for big government, it became an excuse for regulation, and then conservatives said, well, I'm against that. That then got translated into, well, then you're against the environment. And nobody stood up and said, wait a second, we need to have a fundamental, alternative, better solution. Let me give you an example, which you are aware of because of Three Mile Island right here. In 1979, the left made a movie which was about as intellectually honest as Gore's recent movie. It had Jane Fonda in it, which told you almost all you needed to know. And it was called the China Syndrome. And it's just fundamentally false. It's a lie. But the combination of Three Mile Island and the China Syndrome all of a sudden led to an end to developing nuclear power in the United States. Now, let me give you the numbers. When you go back home and you run into your left-wing friends who are really desperately worried about carbon, and they really worry about Kyoto, and they think that there are going to be 20 feet of ocean next Tuesday, and the penguins are going to be walking on sand, and oh my God, why don't we do something? And of course, whatever the something is means more government and bigger power. Give them the following number. It'll drive them crazy. If the United States had developed nuclear power at the same level as France for electricity production, we would this year put 2 billion, 200 million tons less carbon in the atmosphere, and we would be 15% better than the Kyoto requirements. Now, of course, they'll probably tell you, well, you can't do that. You say, okay, tell me again how important Kyoto is. I'll tell you again, once again, how important it is we do something now. To show you how stupid the left is. And I mean that word deliberately, because you watch these people and you kind of figure out, how do they make these things up? Gore testified recently that he wants to have no new coal-burning plants until we have the perfect coal-burning plant. This is after a man who wrote in Earth and the Balance that the greatest threat to the human race in the 20th century was the internal combustion engine, which meant that he had managed to somehow skip Stalin, Hitler, and Mao Zedong. Not an easy trick for somebody who was actually going to a very successful private school, but he did. Here's the fact. A new coal-burning plant produces 25% more electricity for the same amount of carbon. So if Gore was serious about reducing carbon, he would actually be offering a tax credit to block modernize all of the current coal plants into a next generation coal plant, and he would immediately get a 25% reduction in carbon per unit per megawatt of electricity, which is, by the way, more than Dianne Feinstein hopes to get by 2040. And he would do it without any government coercion, without any litigation, without any regulation. He would do it because it would just make economic sense to do it. So I believe we can create a green conservatism based on science, based on incentives, based on tax credits. And I think we can actually do a better job than the left because their bureaucracies inherently can't deliver. Superfund spends a third of its money on regulation and litigation. That money ought to be spent on engineers and recovery. And that's a total, we can offer a better model. So I just want to urge you, don't back off on this. Be prepared to go into the Philadelphia suburbs and say to the most passionately interested environmentalists, terrific values, here's a better way to get there. And we will suddenly have a new dialogue in America.
Okay, great. And that new dialogue, okay, and that new dialogue is going to be on markets, market orientation, practical realism, incentives, and a focus on science and technology and engineering to help us with our environmental problems. And giving us environmental solutions. So, and one of those ways that I like, you know, a new market that I see is emerging is in the case of motor oil. Okay, and I just came across a little while ago a company that takes oil that has been used in cars and they retrieve it from places that do oil changes, you know, the different shops that do oil changes. And what they do is they take out the impurities from, you know, the car and the dirt, the, you know, from the, when it's getting collected. Boy, I can't even get that out. That the oil collects in the engine, okay. And then what they do is they filter it out. They put in more additives of what was taken out during the process of the motor oil being inside the engine, and then they reuse it. They recycle the oil and you know, to put back in the car during oil changes. Now, of course, you know, there's a lot of things right now with new technologies. It costs a little bit more than, you know, your normal oil, but, you know, it's worth it. And how often do, you know, people change their oil and have oil changes, you know, anyway? And so if anyone in chat or if anyone would like you like to call and ask about, you know, where they could find one of those dealerships, all you have to do is give me a zip code, and I can look up through this website that what would be the closest, you know, place that would help you out, and you know, and get that done. And speaking of calling, I will give out the phone number again to call in. That's area code 347-945-7428, and while we're waiting for someone to call in, I'd like to put out, you know, some more information with a book that Newt has. It's called the with a gentleman called Terry Maple, and they put out A Contract with the Earth. Now, anyone who is familiar with Newt Gingrich is familiar with the contract with America, you know, Contract of America. So excuse me, the contract with America, I should say. Okay, Greg, I'm going to take a moment here to say thank you, someone, for coming into the chat. Okay, and the person else, thank you, was Mark Prasik. He has a show himself. It's a different kind of forum. It's a video and chat on Facebook. It's an app. You can either use a webcam and a mic or just use a mic to, chime in. Very interesting forum. I suggest that. And for people who are up late, it is 10 to midnight, but it's also, you check it off, it's also from midnight to 2 a.m., and that's Eastern time. Okay, great. All right, well, thank you, Mark, for coming into the chat. So here's there was 10 points in the contract with America, okay? But with the contract with the Earth, there are 5 different points, okay, on how we can, begin, to start thinking as green conservatives, okay? One is demand objectivity. And I'll give when we talk about demanding objectivity, one of the problems that people have been having with the issue of global warming, on whether it exists or not, is that there's been so much conflicting evidence. Okay, and so much, and unfortunately in some instances, chicanery by scientists, or rather scientists because of for the people they work with, who have an agenda to prove that global warming exists, where they have tweaked the data, okay, in order to show evidence of global warming. Okay, now the way that they tweak the evidence is that what they would do is they'd have weather stations throughout the globe, okay? And what they would do is they would actually shut down the weather stations that were not bringing in the data that was backing up their claims that global warming was actually happening. And so you'd get the data from all these spots, all these different other weather stations, that what they're doing is they're creating evidence instead of, just putting the facts. And that's one. That's why you have to have objectivity. Because one thing we like to, deal with in the conservative conversation, okay, is the truth. And we want to, have the truth. And that's part of what these new stations with Blog Talk Radio and Mark's show and Sammy's show is, we try to put a light on the truth, because the truth isn't coming out in the mainstream media. You're not getting it from, the so-called conservative media. You're not getting it from your MSNBC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC. You're not getting it from, Rush Limbaugh and all the other, talk show hosts. And one thing that we do here on the conservative conversation is we tweak people's curiosity on different issues. And then we recommend, here's a little snippet, of the truth. Go and do your own research. We don't say, hey, take us for our word, But go ahead and here's what we've got, and go out and do the research yourself. You'll be much better informed if you do it that way, and that's something that we promote here. Okay, the second one is educate and inspire. Okay, and to face the challenges of recruiting, training, and equipping a nation, equipping the United States of entrepreneurial environmentalists. Okay, and these are going to be the new industries that are going to come about to help in environmental remediation, to clean up the environment, different ways, different technologies. One of those technologies that I'm a big fan of is hybrid technology, because what we do is you take the technology that exists already, okay, and that's been existing for a long time, and I'm talking about, gasoline-powered engines, and mixing that with, the newer technologies, and that's the cell technology, battery technology, and you make a hybrid which is, you know, almost a mix of an electric car and a, you know, gasoline-powered car. Okay, and also there's kits that you could get out there where you can convert an engine to work on fuels such as spent oil or vegetable oil from restaurants. Now, you have to actually filter the impurities, you know, from this the vegetable oil, but you actually can run your car on it. I heard one drawback is that it makes the cars, you know, makes some cars smell like French fries. But if you like French fries, I don't know how much of a problem that would be. So that's what we need. We need to, you know, educate, you know, instead of having our schools be where, you know, they just got to learn, you know, information to pass these state tests. We should be getting them ready for the new technologies that are going to be needed in order to make America on the, you know, as was said, you heard in the clip, America at the top, you know, of the, you know, environmental industry, okay, through using the markets, okay? You know, if you can prove to an industry that it can save money, okay, by going green because then they won't have to, you know, do as much cleanup, then they'll go for it because businesses, let's be honest, businesses are in the market for making money. That's why they're there. Okay? And you also, you know, give other incentives. So, okay, I just paused there because I've seen somebody put something in the chat. And I like to communicate both with people in the chat and, of course, the people who are listening. Okay. Well, anyway, so what I like to bring for number three is to bring up number three in the point in the contract with the earth is called encourage, you know, number two is a good segue into number three, which is encourage green enterprise. So to protect and sustain Earth's vitality, we must endeavor to calculate, monitor, and control humanity's footprint, okay, and we all know we're talking about the carbon footprint, okay, finding workable solutions, okay, because we need to reverse the historical trends of waste, pollution, depletion, and degradation. And we all know what waste, you know, waste is what Samuel was talking about earlier, and we're talking about landfills, okay, they're just piling up. Actually, I don't live that far. I mean, it did take me about a half an hour to get there, but I don't live too far from a massive landfill. And it just, you know, and it has problems. You know, I mean, you get so much compaction that actually what they have is underground fires that it's very hard to get to because it just has, you know, literally almost a mountain of trash over it. And it just burns and burns and burns. It puts a lot of VOCs, which are called volatile organic compounds, into the air, and it affects the population in the region. Okay, so that's why, you know, that's why recycling is so important, because we want to put as, you know, and composting, so we can put as less as possible inside these landfills. Okay, now we'll talk about pollution. Okay, when we talk about pollution, of course, we're talking about carbon, we're talking about methane, okay? And one of my pet peeves, and a lot of people might not see this as pollution, but trash in the streets. I mean, you know, you could go along a highway, okay, and, you know, see all kinds of, you know, trash on the streets. Then, you know, that's pollution as well. It's actually a pet peeve of mine. There's no reason for there to be that kind of trash strewn throughout the, you know, the highways and neighborhoods. You know, there's no reason for that. And what that does is, you know, the chemicals that are in some of the plastics leach into the soil, okay? And then what that does, it gets it to the groundwater, okay? And then, you know, and that can, you know, the natural groundwater, and that can, you know, that can affect us all as well. And then depletion. Okay, depletion is a important one, especially when it comes to, you know, deforestation, which is a, you know, I'm a strong advocate of curtailing deforestation because, you know, this might sound silly, but I think one of the solutions that could be looked at is instead of cap and trade, because I'm not a big fan of cap and trade. There's too much opportunity for corruption in cap and trade. Now, what I would suggest is, if you want to do some kind of system, is trees are a marvelous, carbon sink, And if you take, do a calculation on how much carbon one tree will absorb, and then what do trees do with carbon, from the carbon dioxide, They take it, They use it to help make food, and what do trees put out? They put out oxygen. So you have a win-win situation, So, for as much carbon as a company puts out, then I would suggest that instead of buying more carbon credits, because carbon credits is like invisible money. It's something that isn't tangible. It doesn't really exist, But a tree does. A tree does exist. And instead of these carbon credits, it might sound like, as I said, it might sound silly, to say it, but in practice, I think it can have a real impact. So instead of buying carbon credits, this company buys the same amount of trees, so as I said, calculate how much carbon that, a certain type of tree will absorb. Let's say that, an oak tree could absorb, and I don't know the numbers, and it would be an interesting project for someone to research. That's another part of what we talk about. I'm going to go off on a tangent here for a second. Is that's another thing. People do their own, research on information that's out there, but also, do your own surveys, do your own research to find things in. And if someone could actually do this research, and then call in on it, I think, I would definitely put that on air, and these shows are archived, so it would be information somebody could get later. But anyway, so what my point is just, let's say that one oak tree can, take in, and this is a grown oak tree, can take in one ton of carbon a year, And let's say a business, puts out 3 tons of carbon a year, that's going to go into the atmosphere, Well, in essence, to offset the carbon that they're putting out, instead of buying these carbon credits and cap and trade, they have to purchase for the planting of 3 trees. And in my opinion, that's a win-win situation. Now, if you think it's silly, that's fine. People are their opinion. But if you do the calculations, I think it's possible. And if you have a disagreement or if you think that's a good idea, please feel free to call in, area code 347-945-7428. Or if you want to say something on it in the chat, that would be appreciated as well. So now I'll move on to degradation. And that's degrading, degrading the quality of air, degrading the quality of water, And I think the way degrading soil, and one thing I don't like about and this could degrade air, water, and soil, and one thing I do disagree with a lot of conservatives with is nuclear power. I am not a fan of nuclear power. I mean, just look at what happened over in Japan. Now, of course, you'd have to be smart. You don't put a nuclear power plant over a fault line or that close to where a tsunami can, damage it the way in which it did in Japan. Of course, there's probably not, so you'd have to do it smartly. However, you're still going to have nuclear waste. Where are you going to put the spent fuel rods? Where are you going to put the spent nuclear material? Where are you going to put the spent the irradiated hard water that's used to cool down the nuclear power plant? There's got to be a place to store it. Now some are saying, oh, we just shoot it out in space. You want to talk about costly? You want to talk about cost parity? I just don't think that it's feasible. And so that's something I do disagree with on there. I much would rather see them spend efforts on solar panels. There's one thing people could do research on, and perhaps I'll probably have one night where I talk more exclusively about this. It's called the Grand Solar Plan. Okay, and what its goal is to have a large portion of just the energy consumption in the United States by 2050 to be based on solar panels. Now, a lot of people do not agree with it. As I said, I'll have one night where if people want to call in, and ask more about it, then I'll give some more details, about it. But what I think what would also help, and will actually in the long run would help homeowners, and individuals, is that solar panels for the home. Okay, there's passive solar panels to help, heat water. Okay, there's also ones for, energy, of course, for the house. And there's some who have solar panels at their home where they actually get a credit from their, local energy company, because the energy company is actually getting money or getting energy to the grid from that home. Because the home has excess energy from the solar panels, and then it was actually able to get credits in that way. So that's why, so if people do it on each individual home, I think that could help the environment. Also, something I'm a fan of is, geothermal heating and cooling. Now these are long-term things. I mean, if you just buy a home or have a home built, okay, that, those are good ways to start, especially if you're going to be in a home for a long time. But even if you're not, that could definitely be a selling point. So, hey, you'll save, the house, the mortgage might be higher, but you're going to save on having a much lower heating and air conditioning bill, so that could be a selling point. And same with solar panels, okay, that, for electricity or even water heating. One idea that I would like to see, that I like to do it at my house, but frankly, I don't have the money for it right now. But or when I have a house built, you'd have to tear through some walls and things of that nature. But this would be something for having a house built would be an idea. Is you have solar panels on the roof that goes into a battery, because that's one of the things about solar panels is storage. Okay, so while you're storing the energy in a battery, you have that battery hooked up to what you see in restaurants, okay? And there's hand blowers, okay? So you don't use your, how often you go in your bathroom to dry, you use a sink, and then you dry your hands. So instead of using a towel, okay, you can use this blower. You hit the button, blow comes out for, 30 seconds, okay? Doesn't deplete the battery. You come back, and the battery recharges, okay, from the solar panels. Now, people ask, well, how's that going to save me money? Well, think about, if you have it high enough, if you have it high enough, you could even dry yourself off, after a shower using the blower, So what you would do is you would save costs in detergent. You would save, costs in, money by laundry, but not having to wash the towels as often, okay? And plus, you wouldn't have to buy as many towels because you have the system that can, help dry your hands and possibly even your body, instead of that. So, it's a, an idea that I think is outside of the box, and I think that's what we need, just things like that are each individual. See, the government has nothing to do with it. It's an individual incentive to say, hey, you know what? I can save money this way. Let's do that, Okay, now the fourth in the contract with the earth is give, help, and share. Is you have these technologies, okay, these American technologies, through businesses, creating these technologies and entrepreneurs, okay? But with the help of philanthropy, okay, you can take these and you can share the technology with, you know, I know there'll be, you know, a lot of people like, oh, well, you know, that doesn't sound very conservative, but, you know, and sharing this technology with people who, you know, who don't have it. I mean, that's part of, you know, conservatism is conserving, okay? And, you know, in conserving, you know, the planet by conserving the knowledge, okay? And in knowledge, you know, while, of course, you want to make your profit, you want to, you know, for coming up with the idea, but you also, you know, in a philanthropic mind, is you also want to be able to give those technologies to the places that are not in the position yet, okay, to create them and to utilize them, you know, and you help build them up. I mean, in the market, it's kind of like giving a sample. It's kind of like, you know, you go to a grocery store and you give a sample of, you know, a piece of cheese or something like that, in which, you know, oh, wow, this is pretty good. Well, let's go ahead and go buy a pound of that cheese. So, you know, you give them, to show them, hey, you know, share with them, this is what this technology can do, okay? We've created it, and we're getting our profits from it. But we'll share part of this technology with you, but then, of course, you know, you come back, and you buy, you know, they got to buy the, you know, the equipment in order to be able to do it. But you still have to go somewhere to share the technology, okay? And fifth is long-term thinking, okay? We've got to think in the long term, and I alluded to this earlier, is we need to have both social, economic, and environmental policies, okay, which work together, not one battling against each other, because you're not going to be able to get sustainable developments, okay, at the cost of society or the cost of you know, the environment or the cost of, you know, the economy. One of those three cannot suffer, or it's not going to work. It's just not. Because look at how things are. Look how contentious the environmental issue is. Okay. You have the economy. Okay. Oh, well, you know, if we try to, you know, become too green too fast, it's going to damage the economy. It's going to hurt jobs, okay? So people are resistant to it. People are resistant to environmentalism, okay? Because they think, oh, it's going to hurt the economy. And in part, they could be right if it's done wrong. And on the other hand, you're going to have the people like, well, wait a minute, you know, we're going to destroy the planet. You know, we're polluting the planet, you know, because we'd rather, you know, prop up the economy. But then the environmentalists are going to, there's going to be resistance and resentment from the environmentalists. So now you're going to have business, society, okay, and environmentalists all fighting against each other. And that's not going to get things done. I mean, that's not long-term thinking. Okay? It's going to have to be, you know, it's going to have to work together in order to do that. Okay, and I look, I see Samuel is back on the line, so I'd like to bring him in, freaking shut in. So here you go, Sam.
Hey, Robert. Yeah,
hey,
I mean,
Sam.
I agree. We all got to work together. The government, business, individuals, and the environmentalists, and do it a logical way. Instead of trying to fight people in court over one issue or another, come together.
Right, and that
where
takes
we,
a lot of time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, come together where we can find common cause and start from there.
Right,
that's how I look
through,
at it.
Right, and if you take it through litigation, okay, it takes a long time. I mean, everyone knows how long courts take. You know, it's going to take, you know, if you get, you know, in bureaucracies, you know, the, you know, when they want to have new, you know, you know, have new, you know, policies, that just takes so much longer. With all the bureaucratic red tape, you know, instead of building markets and building incentives, I mean, people are, you know, unless you give people a good reason to do it, and I'm not talking through fear. I'm talking, you know, through their own advancement. Okay, they're going to be much more accepting, you know, of adopting those kind of, you know, policies and methods in protecting and sustaining the environment.
Exactly. Exactly. And sometimes, though, and I hate to put it this way, sometimes, though, like I've got to name that valley out there in California where Obama shut off the water to it because of one little tiny fish.
I don't recall I don't recall where that is.
But because of that one little fish that really had no impact on the environment, thousands of farmers' croplands turned to a dust bowl.
Well, see, one, and I understand that. And one of the, I mean, with the fish, you know, I mean, but one thing I have to say is that when considering on whether, you know, shutting off the water or, I think there are some concerns with the Keystone Pipeline, environmental concerns with the Keystone Pipeline. Some are valid, some are not. That what I think when you do a cost-benefit analysis, and I'm talking about, you know, environmental costs as well, and when I talk about, you know, different species, I understand the food web and, you know, the food chain and things of that nature. But what you have to be careful with, and I'm not saying these fish fit in that category, is that because, you know, chances are they don't, you know. But when they do, you got to make sure that it's not a keystone species, okay? Now, if you disrupt a keystone species, then you very well could, you're asking yourself, for, you know, asking for problems.
Agreed. I mean,
you know.
I mean, and there was no real scientific proof that those fish would have actually been harmed if they didn't shut off the water, but because of some of the far left environmental people, which you know and I know both can take it to the extreme where it is not good for society, and it's not good, I mean, a lot of times it's not even good for the animal itself. I mean, a lot of these environmental groups out there that are on the left, they would love to stop hunting, but they don't realize that hunting, like on the deer, keeps the deer population down so they don't become overpopulated and get infested with diseases, and which would wipe out the population.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, and, they could, and there could be starvation as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then yeah, starvation could be a problem, you know, for that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if they become overpopulated, they run out of food. Then you also look at deforestation because of they've killed all the plants that they normally eat or graze on. I mean, so there's a lot of things out there, and everything has to be looked at with common sense, and we have to work together. The liberal part of the environmental and the conservative part of the environmental, and when people say conservatives are not environmentalists, they're lying. And but if we don't come together, we're going to be fighting until hell freezes over.
Right, and you're not going to get and you're not going to get a lot done this way. You know that
no.
way.
Exactly.
But, you know, because exactly. And see, and part of the fight, you know, part of the fight is that you have, you know, and see, I think part of the fight is when the Democratic Party and the liberals, okay, when they, you know, when they pretty much took over, and I think that liberals and the Democrats have almost pretty much hijacked the environmental movement so they can propagandize their redistribution of wealth agenda. Okay.
Exactly.
And because of the Democrats and the liberals, they have pretty much, you know, taken over the narrative of environmentalism, that even if they do bring up something that would be worthwhile and helpful, conservatives and Republicans just automatically like, well, wait a minute, that's coming from a Democrat. That's coming from a liberal. I don't like that. It's like, well, wait a minute. You know, you're kind of blocking the way, because it's not the environmental policy that you have a problem with, okay? It's the source, you know. That's what I say. We have to cease to see environmentalism as a liberal conservative, a Democrat, and a Republican issue. I mean, it shouldn't be, you know, it shouldn't be considered, you know, one or the other. You know,
well,
because
I
all
mean,
that does is it hinders us.
I mean, I'm not a very big supporter of Greenpeace, but one thing Greenpeace does is they get out here and interfere with these Japanese and Russian whaling ships. And I support them 100% on that. I mean, they do have some very progressive policies in other areas of environmentalism.
Mm-hmm.
But what they do for the whales, I give them kudos. Because you know and I know the whale population is still not where it needs to be at.
No, not at all. Not at all.
And
actually, it reminds me of a Star Trek episode. And it talks about keystone species. And I mean, you know, I know I'm throwing a little sci-fi out there. But is that, you know, there's a Star Trek movie where, you know, some alien comes back searching for humpback whales. The humpback whales were hunted to extinction. Well, this alien started evaporating the oceans of the Earth, searching for the humpback whales. You know, so it almost destroyed the Earth, looking for a species that humans killed off. You know, so we got to be careful when, you know, we have species. When they do construction or anything of that nature, to make sure that if there's, you know, what kind of species they could be damaging. You know, I mean, I know a lot of it. You know, when they shut down a project or stop a project because of some kind of, this kind of toad or this kind of lizard or something like that. I mean, personally, I think it's BS. And because I think that the environmental issue has become so contentious between, you know, people who consider themselves liberal and people who consider themselves conservatives that, you know, they try to do things like that to, you know, get them in their, you know, get to them. You know what I mean? And it's done purposefully to say, look, see, these guys must be against the environment because they don't want to do this. So they're making it political, and I think by making environmentalism political, okay, it's really hurting the cause. It's really hurting environmentalism.
Well, I think me and you've talked about this before. It's like when you get up into the northwestern part of the country where they do a lot of logging at, that some of these people from some of these different far left liberal green movements where they'll go in there and drop spikes into the tree so when the loggers go cut down the tree that it will kick the chainsaw out and either kill them or hurt them very bad. You've heard about that before, haven't you?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Spiking. Yeah,
spiking.
That does the green movement or the environmental movement any good by doing that.
Right. And it's just we're just like ELF, Environmental Liberation Front. I mean, you don't hear a lot from them now, you know, about them now, but they've really put a bad name on environmentalists. You know, and then you hear Rush Limbaugh. See, this is one something that drives me absolutely nuts about Rush Limbaugh. Okay, is he would say environmentalist wackos. It's like, you know what, you should not say that. You know, now there is environmentalist extremists, but just because they're passionate doesn't mean they're wackos. You know, I mean,
well,
I'm sure there are some extremists that do think that, you know, like spiking trees, I can't agree with that. Because
I would call them
harm
wackos.
To other people.
Yeah,
sorry?
I would call them wackos, the guys that do the spiking of the trees.
Well, yeah, that's true. But I'm talking about the when Rush said, I mean, I don't think there's an environmentalist that Rush has ever said anything nice about. I mean,
no,
really.
I mean, I don't listen to Rush anymore. I don't listen to
him
anymore. And I don't listen to soon-to-be ex-Neil Bortz radio show, which will be taken over by Herman Cain. Screw them. They've sold out the conservative movement. And I will only support people like Newt Gingrich, Michael Savage. I still have a little bit of respect for him. Mark Levin, I lost all respect for him. But, I mean, you're right. Rush should not throw a whole group of people in there under one name, wacko.
Right, and he does. I mean, there's times I feel like Horn said, yes, Rush, I'm a Republican and I'm an environmentalist. It can happen, you know. So, you know, you don't have, and there's actually, you know, because there are people out there, and I respect them, that are one issue party, you know. So there are people, there are some people who are Republicans strictly because of pro-life, okay?
Yeah.
And there are some who are Democrats strictly because of, you know, environmentalism, for instance. Okay?
Or they're pro-choice.
Or pro-choice, but, you know, but I'm bringing up environmentalism because I don't think you know, for the people who are one issue, you know, party goers, and you know what I mean by that.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, they're in one party because of one issue. I'm saying that if that's your main issue is environmentalism, okay, which is fine. You don't have to belong to the Democrat Party. I mean, you could like myself. I mean, most of my political values fall under the Republican Party, but I'm also consider myself an environmentalist. And you know, I've been looking for ways, you know, to be able to reconcile that. And with green conservatism, where you're protecting the environment using, you know, science and technology and, you know, market orientation, you know, practical realism, you know, incentives, tax incentives, you know, where you're not taxing people so that you can give the money to whatever program that a lot of the times isn't even for environmental programs.
Exactly.
Okay. What you do is you give people tax incentives to, you know, defray the cost of, you know, doing something. And people are like, oh, that's subsidies. But yeah. I mean, the government subsidizes oil. They do.
Well, they also subsidize a lot of minority businesses. You know,
immigrant businesses, right.
Yeah. And if they can subsidize those, why can't they give a tax break to companies that are trying to form an initiative for environmental issues that will, in the long run, will actually help our country advance its technological values and goods that we sell worldwide.
Right. I mean, and I don't agree with. I don't agree with much of what President Obama does. Okay. And I don't agree with everything he's done, and for, you know, the environment, you know, for in the name of the environment. Okay, there's been a few things here and there that I'm like, okay, that, you know, okay, that's fine, you know, that's good. But I mean, a lot of things I don't, you know, agree with, like the whole cylinder thing, because that really wasn't about the environment.
Well, the majority of his environmental stuff is all politically motivated, and I doubt the guy really believes in it. I mean, you ought to see his motorcade drive by you in D.C. There'll be 10 SUVs, 10
you
or
know,
15
motorcades. I wonder if there's hybrid SUVs. No, seriously, I mean, I believe if you're going to walk, if you're going to talk the talk, you walk the walk. Okay? I believe if you're going to walk, you know, walk the walk, talk talk. Say, look, if I'm going to have a motorcade, every single one of those motorcade, all those SUVs have to be hybrid. And hybrid SUVs exist.
Yes, they do.
And
oh,
so
I agree.
Say, hey, look, if I'm going to have a motorcade, I'm a green president. Okay? My motorcade is going to be hybrid cars. That's what it's going to be. You know? And you know, and there's you know what? Oh, well, let's make sure when these cars get oil changes, let's make sure they go to one of these service stations, okay, that do oil changes. That usually is just, it's called Eco Power Oil, okay?
That's recycled oil.
Exactly, it's recycled oil. Hey, if we're going to do an oil change on these cars, let's do this. Because that's a business saying, hey, look, people want to be green, let's give them an outlet to do it. You know, one of the things I really like is that that rubber mulch. It's made from tires. It's made from ground up tires.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. And I mean, there's a couple of couple other green initiatives, like down here, well, they do it all off the East Coast, especially to form new reefs. You know how they'll take tires and they will put them in a certain area, then over a period of time, plant life and fish life and...
They'll start growing inside the tires, right?
Yeah.
Micro ecology.
There's a few good things we do with some of our garbage, and that right there to me is providing the fish life and the plant life in the ocean a place to grow. I mean, I'm not trying to get off on a different subject, but I mean, there are things that we can
do. Well, no, that's reusing, and that's a big part of environmentalism.
Yeah. Versus otherwise, tires that are unretreadable get thrown in a big dump, and I'm sure you've seen news reports where these tire dumps have caught on fire, and they just load the air with pollution.
Burn and burn and burn. Tires are awful.
They're almost hard to put out those kind of fires. But I mean, the American people, we got to be more conscientious, and we got to encourage other countries. But we cannot be the environmental keeper for the world.
I think we should be. We should be the leaders, but not the keepers, and that's different. Being a leader is much different than being a keeper. I think we should be at the forefront of of the environmental movement, because we are America, and that's what American exceptionalism is all about.
Right. We cannot be the country to expect to afford to take care of other countries' environmental issues. I mean, we can assist them, but don't do that at the American taxpayers' expense. So,
and I think that's part of the fourth point of the contract with the Earth. Okay, you help them, you share some of your technologies. I'm not saying you outright give it to them and say, hey, you created this. You do got to share them, to give them a hands up, not a handout.
Exactly.
Give them a hands up where they can, and once, they can, start taking it on for themselves, they should do so.
I mean, after living in Malawi for 2 years and seeing what the overpopulation has done to the country, from the disorganization of the country, where, to be honest with you, the average person does 95% of their cooking with wood.
Right, and they chop down a lot of trees.
They chop down all the trees, and they have to use it for fuel.
Mm-hmm.
And in what they have done with the overpopulation, with the forest that the wildlife grows up in. When I lived there in Malawi, a giraffe had crossed over from a game park that was from Zambia, that was right next to the Malawi-Zambia line.
Mm-hmm.
And the people there in Malawi, the giraffe had been extinct in Malawi for so long, these people had never seen a giraffe, and they thought it was a monster.
Oh, wow.
So they went out and killed it.
Ugh. That's sad.
And it's just, if the UN can do one thing right, is help educate people, stop all this political agenda, anti-Americanism, and get out here and educate people about life, the environment, and a general education. And luckily, when I lived in Malawi that time, they had a pro-Western dictator. He was called Life, President for Life, but he was a dictator. He did promote education in his country. You could go from Malawi and see green fields of corn, which they call maize over there.
Mm-hmm.
And you could drive into Zambia, or into Mozambique or Tanzania, and you would see nothing but dry, barren fields. because he took the initiative to educate the local villagers on how to take care of their fields and stuff. And in Malawi does do a pretty good job on protecting their wildlife, except for that one example with the giraffe.
Well, yeah, well, they thought it was a monster because, you know, up in Portsmouth.
Yeah, because they'd never seen one before. Giraffe won't let you, I mean, giraffe ain't going to let you within 200 yards of them before they run off. I mean, I've been to different safaris and different game parks, and once you get too close to them, they're not going to hurt you. They're going to run like hell.
And they're going to get out.
Yeah, but I'm going to hop back off and get ready for my show. I told you I'd try to call back in if I could, and I hope I didn't get too much off your subject line.
Oh, no, it was pertinent. It was pertinent. And I appreciate you coming in, Sam, and we will be, I'm sure I'll be talking with you later on this evening.
Well, talk to you shortly, my friend. You keep on rocking, Patriot, with this great show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Because they take care and thank you very much at the same time.
Okay. All right.
All right. Good to see you.
Bye-bye.
Yes, folks, for those who didn't know, that was Samuel Samford. You can also find him, as I said, on Blog Talk Radio. You can find him from 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or daylight saving time now. And or you can find him on Blog Talk Radio, as I said, or Newt Now, which is a application on Facebook. You just go into the search engine there, just put Newt Now in, one word. Click on there, you'll see a series of shows, including mine and Mark Prasek, who you can find there from midnight to 2 a.m. for the people who are up late, part of the conservative conversation. So I'd like to, I think it was last week, I would like to make a correction to something I said last week. Last week I was talking about a something called hydrogen 3. Well, I was wrong. It's actually called helium 3. And it's a potential energy source, clean energy source. But before I get into that, I want to bring a clip about with green conservatism and green energy.
Fora TV, the world is thinking.
I think people care in a sort of cultural checkoff way. The American Solutions, we did 6 surveys last year, and out of all the questions we asked, the highest score was, do you think we have an obligation to protect the endowment we've been given by our Creator in terms of the environment? It was like 95-3, higher than anything else we asked about. And I think people vaguely, generally believe that. But as long as a candidate sounds like they're sort of inside the envelope, you know, so if the candidate gets up and says, I love green, I'm really committed to green, green's really important, I think that'd be very important for us to do things for the environment, I'm for the environment, people kind of check it off. They don't check off the Iraq war. They don't check off the economy. They don't check off social issues. And my guess is if you actually broke it down in detail, you'd find probably somewhere between 6 and 10% of the country actually takes, in a voting sense, where you are in the environment with enormous sincerity, unless they're convinced that you are anti-environment, in which case the number goes up to about 80%. I mean, the country does have, and I happen to agree with this, I grew up I was born in Harrisburg, and I grew up in a context of a family that belonged to that took the Pennsylvania Fish and Game Commission magazine, had a cabin up in the mountains near State College, believed in the Gifford Pinchot, Theodore Roosevelt model of conservation and a republicanism that cared about the environment. And I think that's right. I think if somebody says to you, I don't care about the environment, you have to wonder whether you should allow them to be in public office because they, in fact, don't understand anything about stewardship.
Okay, but so what you're describing is essentially motherhood and apple pie.
No, I'm describing culture. I'm describing the fact that this would not have been true 40 years ago. I think this country has moved very substantially towards saying
You ought to care about clean air. You ought to care about clean water. You ought to care about biodiversity. You ought to care about global warming. And if I don't think you, and I may argue with you about what the solution is, but if you don't care about it,
okay,
I don't want you in public office. That is a big change from 40 years ago when those questions would not have been asked.
And is it a decisive public issue? In other words, do people win and lose elections?
Well, it's decisive for 6 to 10% as a fundamental voting issue. But if you are anti-environment,
okay,
I think it's almost impossible today to win as a person who does not have some sense of concern for the environment.
Al, let's talk about, I mean, you live and breathe this stuff in terms of selling expensive products.
Well, I think Newt is very correct. I think being in favor...
That's no fun.
Well, no, I think he's right, because most people won't consider buying your car if they think you're not a technology leader or you're not in favor of covering the environment issues. But I think when it comes down to on the transaction, it's can I make the monthly payment? And so while they may want a plug-in hybrid, if they can only afford a flex-fuel vehicle or what we call a battery-assisted hybrid, a milder hybrid, that's what they'll buy. That doesn't mean they're anti-environment. They have to be practical as well.
Okay, folks, that was actually the wrong clip. I apologize for that, but it was still interesting to hear. Okay, well, what I was talking about before I played the clip that was supposed to be about green energy is I wanted to make a correction of something I spoke about, I think, the last week on the Green Thursday. That's what I call Thursdays on my show, and Green Thursday, because it's always environmentally themed. I called it Hydrogen 3, and no wonder I couldn't find the movie that was about it. I believe it's called Moon, but it's Helium 3, which is supposed to be a very clean fuel, clean burning fuel. Now, one thing about Helium 3 is that you can't really find it on Earth. And where do you have to go to get it? Okay. Well, they believe, and I'm talking scientists believe, that it is in abundance on the moon. Now, remember back in during the primaries when it was in full force, back when it was in Florida, you've heard Newt Gingrich, so I'll bring Newt up, is that Newt was talking about by 2020, putting a, thank you, Rex, tralfium, is that it? I hope I pronounced it right. There was something about deuterium in there too, Rex, so on an article I was reading. Rex is a friend. He is a caller who comes in very articulate, very knowledgeable about a lot of subjects. And Rex, I offer, if you would like to call in, at area code 347-945-7428 to get about 20 minutes left. It would be great to hear from you, because I know you know a lot about a plethora of things. Anyway, so I want to bring up when Newt was campaigning in Florida, he was talking about by 2020 having a colony on the moon. Now, he got ridiculed, laughed at by both Mitt Romney, Rick Santorum, among others, the media, and now you're hearing about it, you know, pretty often, at least a lot of the articles that I'm seeing popping up on places like Yahoo, you know, and Canada is actually even considering. And so as China is actually considering going up to the moon to try to collect helium-3. Now, one thing, you know, and when Newt was being, laughed at, you know, I was like, well, wait a minute. You know, that's part of, you know, American exceptionalism. Okay. Okay, Rex, I've seen that. Yeah, he says here for the people who can't see in the chat, since I have Google, I'm really not that smart. Another thing I have to say about Rex is he's humble. He's a humble man. And So they're making fun of Newt. Now you have, you know, China talking about going to the moon and having bases on the moon. Canada. Now, if we're going to be at the forefront of the, you know, this possible next space race, okay, then let it be America. I mean, do we not want it to be the United States, you know, to be at the foreground of the space race? And here, keeping with the theme of environmentalism, that it could be, you know, the United States going to the moon, America going to the moon and building a base or a colony there is twofold. One, okay, it would be us doing it, maybe being the first to do it, which would be for science. Secondly, okay, and also showing, you know, having an American presence there, you know, showing once again American exceptionalism. And two, for environmentalism. So, you know, I think that's two bases that are covered. So what I want to talk about is helium-3 is, as I said, I've got an article here that I'm just, you know, and I, you know, that I'm just kind of, you know, looking at. And I've been actually seeing a bunch of these. And there's actually a movie out there I want to bring up, because it's a very interesting movie and it touches on this. And a lot of people like to, including myself, you know, like to watch movies because while it's not completely 100% real, reality, there is at least some, you know, basis in truth in at least some of these movies, you know, from the people that did their research. So it's called Simply Moon, and, you know, it's about people, you know, going up there and collecting it, you know, it's real clean energy. Okay. Now, helium-3, as I said, is supposed to be, you know, real clean burning. And it's fusion reactions, if anyone here is, you know, familiar with fusion, okay, which through my understanding and, you know, it's a lot safer than, you know, the kind of nuclear power that we're talking about using uranium, you know, it's it'd be a lot safer, you know, because they use, usually, traditionally, as in nuclear power plants, as we know, uses fission, okay? And they use the fission to create heat, which is then used to, you know, heat up the water to turn, you know, turn turbines to generate energy, okay? But in helium-3, the fusion process, okay, the energy is created in the reaction itself. Thus, you have more energy, it's clean, and no radioactive material. So remember earlier, when one of the reasons why I said I was against nuclear energy is because of what are we going to do with the radioactive hard water, the spent fuel rods, and, you know, the nuclear material, the spent nuclear material. But I think without further ado, since he took the offer, which I appreciate, I believe I have Rex on the line, so I will let him in to chime in on the subject.
Hey, Robert, right? How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Great.
Yeah, I really like your Thursday discussions because, as I said before, I think that we often cede ground to the left by not addressing certain things or letting them command the language that makes it anathema to anybody who considers themselves a conservative to even address the topic. And the fact is that we're all commanded to be good stewards of the earth, which means that the earth is to be used to benefit human beings without necessarily being destructive. And I think that this topic you're talking about is really important because, and I know you and I have had subtle differences regarding nuclear power in the past, but I think that helium-3 is one really powerful tool given to us that can help us expand nuclear power without all of the complications of waste. And frankly, I recall when Newt started talking about the moon colony, everybody started lambasting him, including Charles Krauthammer, who happens to be a very big moon base space travel guy. So the hypocrisy is just unbelievable. You know that
he was a Newt shiller, right? Shilling for Newt. Well, not Newt. Shilling for Mitt Romney.
Right. Exactly, yeah. And it was pathetic because, you know, he, clearly on this issue he should have at least said, you know, if he had any integrity, he would have said, look, I don't agree with Newt on anything except this, but he didn't even say that. And the thing that's amazing to me is that we have plenty of so-called fossil fuels available to us, but we know that it's not perpetual. And the fact is that things like using helium-3 to produce energy, it could take a long time to develop it and make it marketable. So why not start on it sooner? Well, one of the problems is you can't find too much helium-3. So that makes it kind of hard to experiment with it. But like you said, the analysis is that there's an abundance of it on the moon. The moon is not that far away. It only takes us a couple of weeks to get there. And we know that the Russians and the Chinese are working on it. So why would we give up this potential source of amazing energy in order to, ground our space program? It's clearly a part of the general dynamic that is used to equalize the global economy by bringing down the United States and elevating other countries so that there can be kind of more parity, which makes it easier to control and easier to manage your profits. It's very sad, and I think that it was definitely part of the attack against Newt, and I think it's also a very highlight of why Newt Gingrich should be our nominee and can still be at the convention, because these are the kind of big ideas that require, and I don't like that government do these things per se, but I think that the structure and the environment that's created by government can foster the innovation of entrepreneurs, the free market, and the movement of capital so that these things get done. And if we remember specifically, Newt never talked about making the space program or the moon base a NASA-specific project funded by government debt. He was talking about putting in the structure in place so that private companies, entrepreneurs, and investors will move their capital towards it because it'll be a profitable enterprise. And if you think about it in the terms of energy, it could be a hugely profitable enterprise. So I think we're missing the boat big time by talking about reducing CO2 emissions by eliminating gas from our cars, which scientifically, we know won't have much of an effect in the reduction of overall CO2. Whether CO2 is a greenhouse gas or not, forget that debate. But just the simple fact that if we shut off all the cars, it wouldn't reduce much in the total CO2 levels. But so we're addressing the wrong things. Things are impractical. We're trying. They tried to implement cap and trade. In fact, the very day that Al Gore was in Congress testifying for cap and trade, Newt was there testifying against it. This is a false environmentalism. It's designed to create a structure of basically Marxist economic policy with little environmental benefits. This, on the other hand, has huge environmental benefits. It can be profitable and efficient and lower energy costs, as opposed to what Obama said, under my plan, energy costs will necessarily skyrocket. So, again, it shows that the conservative principles can truly be environmentalist without being costly and Marxist. And I think that that's the message that needs to get out, and I applaud you for doing it.
Well, I appreciate that. And Newt said that, 70 to 80% of the cost would be bared by the by private enterprises for those efforts, for the moon base or the moon colony. 70 to 80%, that's the range I believe he gave for that.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's the model that is very far towards libertarianism and the Ron Paul outlook, but not far enough to be considered libertarianism, but it stands diametrically opposite of the Marxist agenda. And the Marxist and leftist agenda basically is that the government should be responsible for all of these things and decide how to allocate resources. Well, historically, that's just always been a disaster. The libertarian idea, which has a pretty broad spectrum, but it also tends towards the anarcho-capitalism whereby the free market will solve all these problems, isn't correct either. Because, just imagine that you had 100 different firms and entrepreneurs with all their capital all trying to mine the moon. Launching stuff in outer space that has, dangerous properties and could explode and all this kind of thing. It would be chaos. So there needs to be a structure, and sometimes it's hard to imagine these things because it seems like science fiction, but we are in the 21st century.
Right.
And, we landed on the moon as the United States of America before most of us were born or even, aware of what was going on. It's pretty amazing that we should be doing more. But if you look at it this way, for example, Walmart, right, a very successful retail enterprise, it's profitable, and it provides goods and services at very competitive prices, which really benefits mostly the poor and the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
which is why you usually don't find limousine liberals ever setting foot in a Walmart. But the rest of us seem to like it. Now, Walmart works, but how do you get to Walmart? You get there on a road, right?
Right.
Well, how did that road get there? And who polices that road so that people who are only divided from head-on collisions by a small yellow line of paint, I mean, you think about that. There's
right.
nothing to keep two cars from head-on collision except a small yellow line of paint. So the fact is that government has a role in creating these structures and these facilitators that allow the capital to move to where it needs to be. And I think that that's exactly what Newt was proposing with his moon colony program. In other words, set the direction, provide the inspiration, and provide the basic infrastructure to keep it from becoming chaotic, but then allow the capital to freely move to the profitable endeavors. I mean, if we get to the moon, we find there is no helium-3 or anything else worth mining, capital will stop going there. But if it is there, and we have reason to believe that it is, capital will flow there because it'll be profitable, and the market will bring down the price of energy, and it'll make it cleaner for all of us. So that's the real power behind applying true conservative principles, which, when we really think about it, align economically, at least, very much with the libertarian principles. You know, there's maybe, you know, some difference on the edges, but overall it's very common. And this is an important point to make, because basically Ron Paul supporters and Newt Gingrich supporters are not that far apart, especially when it comes to something like this. And it's about creating a unity against the other agenda, which would, I mean, look, let's face it, whether it's Obama or Hillary or Mitt Romney, we're going to end up with hugely excessive energy costs that aren't really going to clean anything up. It's just going to be very expensive.
Yeah, and to the point, you know, on that, I mean, it's, you know, kind of, you know, going to the topic of why, you know, with, and this is a topic that's covered, it's not environmental, but, you know, there's people out there, you know, wanting a broker convention so we can get someone like Newt Gingrich who has this type of vision, okay, and it's going to take the vision of someone like, you know, Newt Gingrich to, you know, get these kind of ideas put out and be implemented. And because I just don't think it's the people you mentioned, you know, Mitt Romney, you know, Obama, Hillary. I don't think that this is something that they would pursue.
Oh, no. No, I mean, it's clear. Well, Obama's made it very clear. He kind of grounded our space program because
right,
I believe
exactly.
that, you know, and he even told the Russians, you know, after I win the next election, I'll be more flexible. I mean, clearly he's decided to give up space to you know, the China or Russia. And, I mean, look, the simple fact is we're talking here about environmental causes. We're talking about clean energy, and that's great. But let's keep in mind the major reason for us to be in outer space. It is the high ground of future military conflicts. If you can build a nuclear platform and park it, you know, in the upper atmosphere above a country, then they will have to do everything you say without you even invading them, because you could obliterate them before they could launch one missile. So us not being up there is just, from a defense standpoint, extremely dangerous and stupid.
Yeah, and that's part of it. As you said, it's not environmental, but it's still relevant, you know, at least when it comes to space. You know, well, look at Ronald Reagan, you know, the Star Wars program, which even back then when I was a kid, you know, I thought it was a good idea for, you know, for our protection. And then you got the missile shield that they want, you know, that was, you know, Poland even wanted to have it, you know, mm-hmm. over there. And then, to my understanding, Obama niched that.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, I think it's evident. We've had 3.5 years of this guy. So it's just evident, the evidence is abundant that he does not have our best interests in mind. And, you know, a lot of times people think when you talk about American exceptionalism or our best interests, that you're basically talking about, you know, an American empire dominating the world. Well, you know, to some extent we've sort of done that, and that's some of our mistakes. But generally speaking, that's not what we're interested in. What we're interested in is benefiting everybody by being innovators, by making things that are better, that are cleaner, that are cheaper, that help more people. And clearly outer space is a part of that, and clearly clean energy solutions are part of it, because energy supplies the modern economy. You have to have
right.
it, and it is absolutely foolish, for example, to hunt a species into extinction, to overfish, to overhunt. And the fact is that conservatives are the ones who have been hunters and fishermen, excuse me, and have always tried to protect everything so that it will be there for future generations. And we can do that again. But when you have these Marxist policies under the guise of environmentalism appealing to people's sentimental emotions for, you know, keeping the planet clean, that are actually going to do the opposite. I mean, if you look at the dirtiest places in the world, they are the places with the most command and control economy. You look at the cleanest places in the world, and they're the places with the freest economy. So we know for a fact that freer countries with freer economies not only generate more wealth and have more innovation and ideas, but they are cleaner.
Well, look, you know, at, the, I mean, you know, look at China not being part of the Kyoto Protocol.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a prime example.
It's an absolute prime example. I mean, look at it this way. We've had some, you know, nuclear scares, you know, that weren't really that serious. I mean, you know, the one that's always pointed out, and we haven't built one since, is Three Mile Island. Well, no one died and nothing really happened. Why? Because we build things that are designed to handle the problems. And the fact is that after 40 years of actually building them, don't you think we would have made them better, cleaner, stronger? I mean, it's just simple logic. Then you look at something like Chernobyl. Well, the reason that that collapsed was because, A, it was shoddily built, and, B, the policies in place in a party system of patronage is that it isn't about the efficiency, the profit, serving customers, or your merit. It is simply about pleasing your superior in the party. And in order to please the superior in the party, you might be willing to cut corners, especially in issues of safety, and look what we got. So clearly a command and control economy is far more dangerous to the environment than a free market. Now, again, I'm not talking about an unhampered free market of anarchy, which is what some of the far-right libertarians advocate, but I'm talking about one where the government does the least that it needs to do in order to keep the order of the rule of law and contract law specifically, so that we don't have a mob type economy where people can be coerced into doing things. A true free market, and that's cleaner, that's better, it's cheaper, and it helps more people. And that's what Newt advocates.
Yeah, I mean, and as you said, we kind of disagree a little bit on nuclear. I mean, it's not the, you know, things like that, like a meltdown, that concerns me as much. What are we going to do with the nuclear waste? But you know, that's something we can discuss another time. A minute and a half.
Okay, well, I'll be real quick. For the next discussion, and maybe everybody who's listening can bring somebody back and tune in maybe next week, we can look at what France does with their nuclear waste. And it's much smarter than what we do here, and it's much cleaner. So we can talk about that in more detail.
Sounds great. Well, I appreciate you calling in.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on. Keep it up.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I usually like to take this time. I'm going to do a little experiment here because there's this music I would like to play at this time. If it's too low, someone just let me know in the chat. Cause, you know, that's part of this organic conservative conversation is you can help me out. And it's only going to be able to play maybe a half a minute of it. So let me know if it's too loud or too soft while I do my thank yous. Let's see if I can get this up here. Oh, I don't hear it. I love this music. But anyway, we got 30 seconds, so I'd like to thank everyone who came to the show tonight. Thank everyone who is going to be on the archive and listens to the whole show. Samuel Samford's show is next, followed by Mark Presick. So everyone, have a good evening, take care, and I will see you on Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Good night.